With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore with our basketball insider, Mike Renier. Mike, welcome back.
Oh, it's always great to be with you. Any day of the week.
There you go. We usually do this on Monday evenings, but it was Halloween. Had to take care of the trick-or-treaters and my grandchildren.
Same here.
There you go. So here we are doing this recorded session now. Mike, I'm going to obviously we focus on the Celtics, and I want to start this by saying in mathematics there's something called the three possibilities postulate, and it goes like this.
Okay.
Either A is greater than B, A is less than B, or A equals B, and sometimes that's translated to either things are going to get better, they're going to get worse, or they're going to stay the same. Now, I have this feeling with the Celtics, with respect to the Celtics, either Cleveland is a lot better than I thought they were, or the Celtics aren't as good as I thought they were, or the Celtics miss Robert Williams more than I thought they would, or some combination of those three.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of those three. I think it's funny, the Celtics are 4-3, but they've had two overtime with the Cavs, with the Cavaliers, both of which they've lost, so they could easily, a basket here, a basket there, the Celtics are 6-1 instead of 4-3, and we're not having this discussion, right?
Right.
Part two, the Cavaliers are one heck of a lot better than I think many people across the country know because of the addition of Donovan Mitchell from the Utah Jazz, who was a great young player there, but he's kind of obscured playing out there in the mountains of Utah, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And here's a kid who can average, you know, 30, 35 points a game. You put him in a Cleveland uniform, and that team is suddenly a lot better. Now, we saw in the first overtime game against the Celtics, he and a teammate each had 41 points.
Mm-hmm.
And I think last night, the Celtics couldn't stop Donovan Mitchell down the stretch last night. He only finished with, quote, 25 points. But they couldn't stop him down the stretch when it was like a winnable game for the Celtics. The Celtics couldn't get a lead. So you have to deal with him. I think the entire Eastern Conference is going to find out that the Cavaliers are perhaps a major player heading towards the playoffs. So we have to take that into account. They're no longer a soft touch for any team, including the Celtics. And I think at this point in the season, seven games in, what we're seeing is that the Celtics are fine on offense, although they do take too many three-pointers. But defensively, they are just really lacking at this point. They have not become cohesive yet. And part of that is the fact that it's early in the season. They are working with a new coach who's entire schematics or system might be entirely different from Ime Udoka's system. And as we remember, Rick, and you've often cited, the Celtics were a bad team right up until Christmas last year, or after Christmas, they were a 500 team, or even a game or two below 500. Now, you don't want that to happen this year, because I look at the Milwaukee Bucks in the standings every day, and they're 7-0.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they're playing without an all-star. Chris Middleton, who's still recovering from an injury from last year's playoffs, didn't play against the Celtics in a seven-game series. They're getting an all-star player back at some point later this season. And then Pat Connaughton, the local product, has also been out with a calf strain for 2 or 3 weeks. He's due back in a couple of weeks. So you're going to add two very productive players back to their roster within a period of time here. And they're going to be actually tougher to beat as the season progresses. So what you don't want is, if you really, in an ideal world, you want the Celtics to finish first to have home court throughout the playoffs, but you don't want to get them too many games behind the Milwaukee Bucks, even early in the season, because I don't see the Bucks having any major flaws or any major setbacks or a long losing streak, you know? So the Celtics have to get their act together a lot sooner than they did a year ago if they want to have some kind of clout going into the playoffs.
They seem to be okay on offense, and I'm wondering, there was a game, I think it was against the Sixers in preseason, where the defense looked absolutely impenetrable. It was amazing.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any of that, and is it possible, Mike, that, let's forget Robert Williams for the moment, we'll pick that up in a minute, but is it possible the rotation has something to do with the defensive lapses?
Oh, yeah, I think it has a lot to do with it. I think, you know, right now, I checked this out. You know, Al Horford, who's 36 years old, still an effective player, is playing almost 31 minutes a game. And that's because Joe Mazzulla, the young coach, has had to play him 31 minutes a game. And I frankly think that's too much. I think for Al Horford at this stage of his career, should be playing somewhere around 24 to 26, 27 minutes a game, not 31 minutes a game, or 40 minutes in an overtime game like he did last night against the Cavaliers. I think that's not a sustainable thing for the Celtics. And that's where you mentioned we need to mention Robert Williams, because he would have an impact on defense. First of all, he would eat up some minutes, and he's also a very good defensive player, an above-average defensive player, a shot blocker, a rebounder, and the Celtics are lacking that right now. And Luke Kornet is not really a viable option at 7'2". He's just too awkward. He can be effective in limited minutes, but I'm a little surprised that Noah Vonleh, who's 6'9", 6'10", and is a good defensive player and a rebounder, not a scorer, but he's playing fewer and fewer minutes the last two or three games. And it just made me cyclical. He may be getting those minutes, you know, three or four games from now, but he hasn't played lately. And I'm a little concerned that maybe Blake Griffin, who has not been part of the rotation at all the last three or four games, he may be considered over the hill. I don't know. When he's been on the floor, he's been ineffective. He's always been a defensive liability, but more so as he's aged. So I think there are some problems there on defense that could be lingering unless they address it and find out if great Blake Griffin isn't a fit. Then you're going to have to drop him and try to pick up a player, less of a name player who is effective on defense. And I think you have to use Vonleh until you find something better. And I think Horford in the long run will have to play fewer minutes to be effective.
I totally agree with that, and I think that coming off the bench, it just with the eye test, it looks to me like Brogdon is the player that we thought he would be, and he really contributes. And Grant Williams has yet to find his groove.
Well, Grant Williams is actually leading the NBA in three-point shooting effectiveness, okay? And I think he's playing well on that end of the floor. But regarding Brogdon, I've always liked him, and Rick, if we watch the Celtics, anybody who watches them regularly right now, I think when Brogdon comes in the game, he's the one player who takes it to the basket, who penetrates, and then dishes out to create better shots for his teammates. I think the other players, and I definitely include Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum in this bunch, they're too willing to settle for the three-pointers, settle for the long-distance shots, when you may have an opening and taking it to the basket. I don't know if they don't like to get the contact and get to the foul line, but a lot of times they're just settling for the three-pointer. And last night, they all had a poor three-point shooting night, and that's one of the reasons they lost to the Cavaliers, even though they went to overtime. So I think as a team, they're still taking too many three-pointers, yet when Brogdon is in there, it's a completely different offensive philosophy. He's taking it to the basket, and he's creating, he's trying to make layups, he's trying to create better shots for his teammates, it opens up his teammates. I think he makes an enormous difference. Right now, I'd rather see him playing more minutes. He's averaging about half a game, meaning 23, 24 minutes per game, and he's become the third leading scorer on the team with a 13.6 average. Derek White has dropped off the BAP. He's averaging only 8 points per game, and he's shooting it poorly the last two or three games. Again, we're talking small sample size, but those are the trends that we're seeing the last few games.
If you were to start Brogdon, where would he plug in?
Right. Well, I think he'd have to play in Derek White's spot as a starter, because Derek White's been starting. You could make now Marcus Smart is shooting literally like 22% on threes and 34% overall. That's not good. That has to improve in the long run. But he's such a valuable player on defense. You have to start him. But I think if I'm Joe Mazzulla, at least I'm considering starting Brogdon, because you get more of a flow. There's a better flow to the offense when Brogdon is in. I think that's clearly obvious, and I think perhaps they should consider that move. And, you know, at some point, you know, 10 or 15 games down the road or 5 games down the road, he may want to go that route. I hope he does, because I think Brogdon's a more effective starter than Derek White.
Well, you get a 10-game winning streak, and we're okay. But right now, we're talking about the dreaded 500 once again, and it's making me sick. Let's talk about the big two. What do you see in the pluses and minuses with them?
Well, I'm seeing Tatum still, you know, I get aggravated in watching Tatum. He's such a great player, still arguing with the officials when he doesn't get a call.
Yep.
And to me, that's not beneficial in the long run. To me, officials look at that and say, this guy's complaining all the time. It's like the little boy who cried wolf. You're not going to get the calls if you're complaining all the time. So to me, he should, his body language should just be, okay, accept it, talk to the referees quietly during a foul shot situation or something, but don't be so demonstrative and putting up antics that the whole crowd can see. And officials, that gets under their skin. There's no question. I think even though they're human, they want to be objective. There's no question human nature says, hey, you know, this guy's complaining all the time. He's not going to hit any calls. Mm-hmm. So I see that from Tatum a little too much still. He has to stop complaining. I think he has to take fewer threes. I love the shot he made late in the game last night where he was out by half court, and Joe Mazzulla designed a phenomenal play where he took the inbounds pass.
Oh, yeah.
Took a straight, and he had a wide open floor, yep. And with his quickness, he's able to dunk it, okay? And I just think, you know, he's got so much skill and talent. I just think he still is on the growing shot in terms of taking it to the basket and maybe getting more foul shots, like Larry Bird used to do, you know? So, and Jaylen Brown, he's been great for the most part, but last night I noticed, I think he took too many outside shots when he's so capable of taking it to the basket. So, I mean, both of them, they're fine. I mean, in terms of scoring average, Tatum's still averaging slightly more than 30 points, and Jaylen Brown's at around 27. So that's great, but I think there's a better ways of getting those points and getting to the foul line and getting opposing players in foul trouble. That's one of the benefits of going to the basket is you get opposing players in foul trouble. But, yeah, I'd say right now the Cleveland Cavs are a tough customer, and you have to add them into the mix with the Miami Heat and the Milwaukee Bucks as one of the elite teams in the Eastern Conference, you know?
Interesting, yeah. The other thing is, I'm not enamored of the three-pointer. I never had, but, you know, I grew up in a different era watching the Celtics. But these guys, of course, are capable with a flick of the wrist for, you know, shooting it from mid-court. But strategy-wise, Mike, I see a team go up by 10 points, let's say, because the 10-point swings last night were ridiculous.
Yes, they were.
But I see a team go up by 10 points, and I wonder, why don't you just keep driving because you've got a better chance for a rebound? On a three-pointer, your team shoots, the offense automatically starts backing up.
No question about it. Like, so Celtics had a 12-point lead last night. I think it was 66-54. They continued to take the threes, and they started missing them, and that's precisely how the Cavaliers got back into the game because the defensive rebounds were easy to get, and then they created their own 14-2 run or 12-0 run to tie the game, and Mazzulla had to call a timeout, and then the Celtics came out and had a 10 or 12-point run. So it's one of those things that today's NBA players on every team take a lot of three-pointers, and I'm not sure if the Celtics really take a lot more than most teams because we see the Celtics play every night,
mm-hmm.
but they do take an enormous amount of threes in terms of percentage of shots, and that's why I like Brogdon's game, right? His mentality is to take it to the basket,
yeah.
And I saw a couple times last night where he actually drew fouls that weren't called, but he's a poker-faced guy. He never complains to the officials, and he keeps playing his game, and his game is to take it inside. And you'd hope at some point that guys like Jaylen Brown and Tatum say, okay, you know what? This is working for Brogdon. He's getting to the foul line. I need to do the same thing. And you're right. By taking it to the basket, especially when Robert Williams comes back, your chances of getting an offensive rebound are much better when you're taking it to the basket because you've got an Al Horford hanging around, you've got a Robert Williams hanging around, you've got like a Noah Vonleh or a Grant Williams hanging around for possible offensive rebounds.
All right, final question. I think I saw last night that Cleveland was the highest percentage shooting three team in the league. And there were so many open threes last night for Cleveland, I couldn't believe it. How does that happen?
Well, I you're right. I think the Celtics are too casual in closing out on those three-pointers. And we talked, remember last year, Rick, we talked about how good Robert Williams
mm-hmm.
was making the hustle plays. We know that Marcus Smart does that. Marcus Smart was drawing fouls off the ball.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. And he's going to close out on those three-point shooters because he expends every ounce of energy that he has. With Brown and Tatum and a couple other guys, they want to save some of that energy for the offensive end. So they're not making that final effort to close out on the three-point shooters. That, I see, is a problem on why teams like Cleveland and other teams have had open three-pointers, you know? And so they have to address that in practice, and it has to be a point of emphasis with the coaching staff in terms of, like, leaving these guys from opposing teams wide open. And, Rick, before we close out, I have to say that I don't know about you, but I'm completely disgusted. But it's not surprising that the Brooklyn Nets would hire Ime Udoka, who is toxic to women everywhere, that they would have the gall to hire Ime Udoka as a head coach. And Kyrie Irving, his blatant anti-Semitism should really cause him to be suspended for a long period of time. I know Charles Barkley was going crazy in shredding Kyrie Irving on TNT the other night. And, you know, Kyrie just put up $500,000 for some cause, but obviously the Brooklyn Nets forced him to do that, and it's a public relations move. But that whole atmosphere in Brooklyn is absolutely disgusting.
Well, it's interesting when you say that because, Kyrie, just when you think you've seen the last of Kyrie, he comes up with something new. But the Celtics did. It's funny, when the Celtics suspended Udoka, I was incredulous, like, what? What?
Yep.
And then when you read about it, you think, okay, they did the right thing.
They did.
Ethically and morally. Legally, I don't know what the ramifications are contractually, but I'm thinking, have the Brooklyn Nets no soul? Jeez.
They don't. They got rid of Steve Nash, who was a perfectly fine human being to begin with, a Hall of Famer. And, you know, but you guys like Durant and Ben Simmons and Kyrie are basically uncoachable, okay? They're uncoachable. They showed that with previous coaches, and even in their public comments, I remember Kyrie said, myself and Kevin Durant will manage the franchise, as if they were owners.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys have said basically they don't need coaching. So whoever's in charge, good luck to Udoka trying to rein these guys in to play defense or to do anything he wants them to do, because Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, and Ben Simmons will do whatever pleases them.
You know, the other thing, Mike, socially, I guess, I know there are people who complain about people like LeBron or movie stars or things like that, or people like that, celebrities, who get up on a platform and they go progressive, if you will. And there are people on the other side who say, well, you know, they should just shut their mouth and dribble the ball.
Right.
But they do have their platform to stand up for people. And then, now you've got Kyrie doing the opposite. And, you know, to me, it's one thing to be plus, to be positive. It's something entirely different to be negative. And people, you know, kids look up to Kyrie no matter what.
Right.
They think he's a hero.
Right. That's right. And that's the point that's precisely the point that Charles Barkley was making the other night. He basically said that Kyrie linked a video, an anti-Semitic video, to his own account. Now, and basically what Barkley said is he owns that now. He can't really retract from that. He owns that statement and that belief. And he said, kids look up, no matter what Kyrie says, that he, you know, he's misunderstood or whatever, kids look up to him. Adults look up to him as a role model, and obviously Kyrie is misinformed and he's ignorant. I mean, actually, Barkley called him an idiot, okay? So Kyrie needs to be more careful about what platforms he uses and how he uses them, but at this point in his life, Kyrie, of course, still thinks the world is flat,
mm-hmm.
So you really don't know what to expect from him, but none of it seems good.
Well, it's to close this out, Mike. I got to say, I just read something. I think it was on the Globe, in the Globe, about something that Lawrence Guy of the Patriots and his wife put on, and it,
yes.
they do something. They do a baby shower for single moms every year,
yep.
And it's an incredible amount of money that they put up for these moms. But more importantly, it gives the moms a social connection and gives them a safety net that they might not have had. And Lawrence Guy did this, and his wife actually started it, but they're doing this out of the goodness of their hearts. They're not, you know, going on tweets about, you know, missing dads and stuff like that. They're just doing something positive. And I just thought, you know, kids and people should know about that great action that he did.
Well, I agree. It's just the opposite of what we're finding from people like Kyrie Irving. Fortunately, there are players and athletes, both in the NBA, the NFL, and Major League Baseball, who have various foundations that help, whether it be single moms who are pregnant or, you know, just disadvantaged people or people who are in a bad way. And I think that's great, and I think those are the ones that those causes should be publicized even more than they are. and the Kyries of the world should be ignored. You know, that's basically what it comes down to.
All right, let's see if we can do that in the next few weeks, all right? Let's see if we ignore it.
Let's see if by next week if the Celtics are playing a little bit better, you know?
Let's hope so, and they're beyond the .500 mark. That's Mike Grenier. I'm Rick Moore. This is MSO News Sports.